good Saturday afternoon to you. You're listening to Woods and Water, South Carolina. My name is Roger Metz, and I'll be with you for the next hour. And I want you to put your right and left arms together and look down. Is your left one more tan than your right one? That's a sign you really like the outdoors. And I look at mine, and my left arm is a lot more tan because I'm going to put the window down, ride with the window down, arm hanging out the left-hand side of the car. Anyway, you can always tell somebody that's that likes to ride with the windows down. That left arm is always darker than the right one. It's going to be a busy one today. I'm telling you as much as I'm telling myself to hang on. We're there's a lot of things going on, and we're going to talk to Gaspar Marino from the good ship Wadmacallit down in behind Sullivan's Island in Charleston. It's Dr. Toler's Cove. Gaspar's going to give us a rundown on offshore fishing and what's going on. And then we're going to talk to Brandon Cobb, the bottom of the hour. Brandon's an FLW pro from Greenwood, South Carolina. Been on the show before, and we just got back from Texas, and it was kind of interesting. You know, they don't cut trees down to put lakes in Texas. They just leave the trees standing there. I mean, part of the lake was, you know, okay, but these big telephone pole lines going across the lake. And I asked my guide, I said, what's that? He goes, oh, on one side, you're okay. And on the other side, you just, you know, say a prayer. But I spent more time idling out there than I ever have in my life. But anyway, Brandon's going to call in. We're going to catch up, talk a little bit about the Texas Toyota Bass Classic last weekend. That was, it was fun to be at. It was an experience. I don't know that I'd go back. No, you just have to see. But anyway, it was kind of a neat thing to go to. We also have, fresh shrimp off the South Carolina coast on May the 16th. They opened up state waters. I had some Magwood shrimp Thursday night down at, the Clinton House. Went down and shot some sporting clays, which is, oh man, I think I figured out the first time I'd seriously shot sporting clays since December the 5th, 1992. Which would have been the day I got married. Before that, I shot like every Friday afternoon and really enjoyed it. Really, and I forgot how much fun it was, but it's a lot of fun. Clinton House, you know, I showed up expecting to get, you know, three or four shooters paired up with a trapper. Well, I guess trappers have been replaced by automatic machines because we didn't have a trapper. You had a little, like a credit card. You stuck it into a reader, told you how many clays you had left to throw, and you just kind of went. So Taylor went with me, and that was, we had a very good time. Just, you know, she was my trapper. She pushed the buttons to throw the clays for me, and I don't know, somewhere around 40 out of 55, which is not bad. But I had to change guns. I can't shoot that over and under with a flip. Go back to the gun that my wife bought me in 1994. Yeah, I can shoot that one. I got a lot of shells running through that gun. It was a lot easier. You just get accustomed to a gun. You just shoot it better than another one, especially in shotguns. Let's see. So yeah, if you get a chance to go shoot sporting clays, we also did a low country boil, or Mike Johnson did a low country boil for us, which was really good. You know, it's the new potatoes, the smoked sausage, the shrimp and the corn on the cob all together. And just, it was a good time. I think he's going to have another one June the 30th. Put that down on your calendars. You can check the Clinton House Facebook page or website. And he'll probably put out some reminders before then. But I think June 30th is the next one. Let's see. Congratulations to all the graduates. I know college has been happening for a couple of weeks. High school, I think, is this coming week or weekend. So congratulations to all your parents for making it through. All the kids, you know, I guess go to the beach and have fun. That's what we always did. Memorial Day is here. And if you're headed to area lakes, there are a few courtesy boat inspection sites. I know we talked to Lieutenant Henry Mitchell last week on the show about boating safety and all. They are having their some today. They ended at noon. Tomorrow, Anderson County River Forks Boat Ramp on Lake Hartwell, 2 to 4. In Fairfield County at Watery State Park, Lake Watery, 2 to 4. The 30th, which would be Monday. Charleston County at Swapu Cut Landing, 10 to noon. And in Pickens County, Gap Hill Landing, Lake Kiowee, 10 a.m. to noon. And what those are is, you know, you drug the boat out. You think you got everything right. When you get up there, they'll offer to do your safety check, which is looking for life jackets, you know, noise-making devices, if you need to have flares on board, fire extinguishers, you know, make sure your registration titling is current and all that stuff in, and it's kind of an amnesty grace period. You know, they expect to tell you what's wrong, and then you have a chance to get it fixed before you get pulled out on the water. We also have brand new deer hunting regulations in South Carolina. Wow. It'd have been a lot better before the politicians got a hold of it. You know, the original bill was great. It accomplished exactly what DNR and a lot of deer hunters wanted, and got through the Senate. Not a problem. Just poof, breezed on through. It got to the House. You had the big low country upstate fight happen. You know, the volley started back and forth, and we got what we have. And I'll get to that in a little bit. And maybe the last part of the show, I'll get to that one. It's just not what we wanted. I mean, I know DNR got what they wanted partially, but it's not what a lot of us wanted in the end. And we'll see how it flushes out, because they have a 4-year study period they have to do between now and 2022. They have to submit a 4-year study. So, and you heard the ad for the PBS Memorial Day program. That's a pretty cool program. It's Sunday, 8 o'clock at night. If you've never watched it, it's a good one. It's one that I'll watch, and I don't watch much of that on TV. So I think that's all that I got written down here for notes and stuff to cover. Few things right quick for the calendar. National Trails Day is next Saturday. That's June the 4th. And across South Carolina, they're going to have some events. Cross State Park, Poinsett State Park, the Awandaw Passage of the Palmetto Trail, and the Walhalla Center of the Palmetto Trail. This is mostly sponsored. I mean, it's a national thing, but it's sponsored by the Palmetto Conservation Foundation. They're going to be hikes at all 4 locations. Let's see here now. Camping is available Saturday night at Cross State Park and Friday and Saturday night at Poinsett State Park in Sumter County. They're going to have hikes at all locations. Let's see here now. And they're going to be different skill levels. So on Saturday morning at Croft and Poinsett, it's a nature hike and a family hike for beginners. There's an intermediate hike for those with more experience. An orienteering workshop will be taught in the afternoon. On the Awandaw Passage, Saturday morning, a 2-mile nature hike and a 4.5-mile exercise hike will be offered at all 3 hike locations. It can accommodate 25 participants. You go online and register for these, by the way. And actually, the big one is Croft, and I've got their stuff here. Yeah, Friday 5 to 8, campers check in on Friday night, June the 3rd. Saturday 8 to 9:45, must check in. And that's where you choose what you're going to do. They also have mountain biking there. 9 a.m., the mountain bike equipment check and skills refresher. 10 o'clock, hiking. You've got the 1.5-mile nature hike, 4-mile intermediate hike, the 2-mile family hike, 10 a.m. mountain biking, with a 6.5-mile and a 10-mile ride. They're going to provide lunch. You got free time in the afternoon. Afternoon activities, the map and compass classes, campfire cooking demonstrations. Let's see what else here. Turn the page. Mountain biking obstacle course from 2:30 to 5. They also have some park activities. Dinner Saturday night. Evening, they got community campfire, storytelling, and s'mores. And we're not substituting anything from the marshmallows. These are graham crackers, Hershey's chocolate, and marshmallows. That's a s'more, not what they tried to pull with the Forest Service last year or whatever. And then they've got a night hike, 8 to 9, Sunday morning breakfast. The Trails Day activities continues. Go to the Palmetto Conservation Foundation, PCF.org, I believe it is, and you can register there. For you, those of you trout fishing in North Carolina, delayed harvest trout waters open under hatchery supported regulations on June the 4th. 34 trout streams, 2 lakes, classified as delayed harvest will open and you can take what you want starting at 6 o'clock in the morning. So, and there's some other stuff going on. We'll get to it as we can. Yikes, this time flies. Anyway, hang on to Gaspar Marino, Wad McCullough, offshore fishing when we come back on Woods and Water, South Carolina. welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Just like I said before we went to break, we are privileged to have Captain Gaspar Marino from Wadmacollet Charters behind Sullivan's Island in Charleston, South Carolina. How are you, Gaspar? Gaspar, you there? Might have to call Gaspar back. You there, Gaspar? Oh, okay. Is he, are we having phone problems again? Live radio. All right. We're going to call Gaspar back and see if we can't make that connection. One more thing I was going to tell you about for the calendar event is that is, the Webb Wildlife Center. It's going to have an open house on June the 4th. It's in Estill, South Carolina. They're going to have bird ID walks, wading bird observations, reptiles and amphibian programs, archaeology programs. They're going to do a rocket net demonstration, fur bearer trapping demo and track casting. That's where you actually get to make, you know, plaster casts of a, you know, coyote or raccoon or something like that. Wildlife photography, canoeing and kayaking, archery, duck and turkey calling, tours of the management area. I mean, you know, Webb is a great place. It's got the cabin, or actually the plantation house there. It's got some outbuildings. The event starts at 9 o'clock, ends at 2 p.m. Pre-registration is available and recommended, especially for some of the activities that are space limited. Space limited activities are birding, reptile amphibian programs, canoeing and wildlife photography. So put that on your calendar. That's June the 4th, Webb Wildlife Center management area. That's in Garnett, Hampton County. And we've got Gaspar back, it looks like. So once again, Gaspar, how are you?
Doing well. How about yourself?
I'm good. Sorry about that little, phone problem there.
Not a problem.
Well, I guess this was going to be a call in from offshore somewhere, but I guess the weather is taking care of that one for today, hasn't it?
Yep. So, actually, first time, in a couple of weeks, you could reach me during the day sitting at my house.
And I guess you look forward to those days, don't you?
Yes. At this point in the year, a day off here and there does not hurt.
I hear you. Well, this is the first time you've been on Woods and Water. Welcome to the show. Take us a few minutes and just tell her about yourself and your boat.
Okay. Well, my name is Gaspar Marino. I'm a owner operator to a 58 foot Carolina boat called the Wadmacollet. I have, been working in the industry for 22 years now. And my boat was actually built. I wanted to get out of private fishing for my family and, be able to sleep in my own bed at night.
Sure.
So, six of my fellow buddies, built my boat in the course of 6 months in the winter, and built it for charter fishing out of South Carolina.
Okay.
We've been, running steady for the last 5 years. Before that, I ran another Carolina boat charter fishing out of Charleston for another 4 years.
Okay. Got a little time on the water under your belt, don't you?
A little bit, yeah.
Well, okay, you know, charter fishing, offshore fishing is a, it's hard to explain for somebody like me who gets out there once or twice a year. You get out there, you're surrounded by water. There's a whole another life out there. You have sea life with all the fish, the dolphins, the turtles, the trash you see floating in the water. It's a really neat experience for somebody who's never been and for people that go back year after year after year. But what, when somebody charters you to go offshore, what do you need to know about them and what do they need to know about you?
Well, I like to always find out what their expectations are. I deal with a number of different types of clients. I have the group of guys that will charter me, you know, a couple of trips a year with the goal of filling the freezers. So we'll plan according to that. You know, a lot of times we like to fish for those types of trips in April, May, and early June.
Okay.
For the tuna, the wahoo, and the dolphin. And that's just your chances of getting the most amount of fish due to the migration patterns.
Gotcha.
And then I'll just have other people that they just want to go out there and have fun. They say, listen, we don't care if we catch fish or not. We just want to go out and hang out with the family. This is our vacation. We want to put our feet up, drink a couple of beers, and just have fun.
Those are the easy people to please, aren't they?
Actually, probably not.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Everybody's got their own little expectations and everything. And, you know, you just try to cater towards them. And the way we look at it is, you know, on my boat, we operate with me and one or two mates.
Okay.
And we look at it as we have six brand new boat owners that are down there for the day.
Gotcha.
Whatever they want and what they expect, we try to cater towards them.
You kind of covered the meat fish trip, which is, you know, right now. And how is that going? I mean, is it as good as it has been the prior years?
It's been a little sporadic this year. We're in an El Nino year.
Okay.
So, you know, it seems like the things have been a little bit earlier than normal. And then also, like right now we should be in the heat of our dolphin fishing, but, and the dolphin migrate basically from the Bahamas up.
Right.
Well, by mid-April, the North Carolina boats were already catching dolphin.
Wow.
And so the migration was not as concentrated as it normally has been.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're catching dolphins here. North Carolina's catching dolphins. Down in Florida, they're still catching dolphins.
Oh,
so it's,
wow.
It's potentially a little bit of a hit or miss now.
Okay.
You know, you should be able to go out there and get fish. You have to be willing to run. You know, for instance, the last week we have picked up and ran, throughout the day. So we'll go fish for a little bit, maybe catch a handful of fish, realize that area wasn't holding much more than what we caught. So we'll pick up and go do plan B.
You haven't much, are there many grass lines out there, well-defined grass lines you can find?
No, there is not. And the reason why is, you know, the grass lines are forming based upon the Gulf Stream and how hard and fast the current has been.
Right.
Past couple of weeks, there's days where you're in the actual Gulf Stream and there's less than a knot of tide.
Ooh.
Without that hard ripping tide, those grass lines and those hard edges really don't form.
Mm.
For instance, yesterday we were fishing and there was a nice hard edge that we watched form. It literally formed in front of our eyes. 20 minutes later, it was gone.
Wow. Any fish in it for those 20 minutes?
What's that?
Any fish in it for those 20 minutes?
We caught a handful of fish right on that edge. Found another edge 15 miles offshore of that. Caught a handful more. Then ended up running in and catching wahoos and tunas.
Cool.
So,
well, that's this
trip. Like I said, you can make a day, but you got to be willing to say, you know, after 2 hours of doing something, if you're not catching fish, change it up.
Got to
move.
You're
doing the wrong thing.
Yeah. Well, that's this trip. You got three other seasons offshore. Tell us a little bit about those three seasons.
Well, our different seasons, you know, I kind of look at it as like March, April, and the beginning of May is our tuna fishing.
All right.
And then we'll go into our dolphin season, which will be May and June. When things start to slow down and the water gets really, really hot, we actually will start bottom fishing. A lot, and those are more of like a three-quarter day. You know, we leave the dock after the sun rises and get back 6-7 hours later, anchor up, and we're catching snapper and grouper.
Okay.
And then when the water starts to cool down, we'll actually go back to tuna fishing.
Okay.
For the fall.
I got you. Do you run any of these just primarily sailfish charters for people who want to catch stickfish?
I'm sorry, say that again.
I said, do you run any charters going mainly after sailfish and all if people want to catch one just to have done it?
We'll target them a little bit, but I try not to run those types of charters because people have to understand that, you know, if you want to go out there and catch a dolphin, well, statistically, we can make that happen.
Right.
But, you know, people have to understand that they're spending money to go fishing for one day, and it's very hard to get that same experience that these private boats have, that owners have tens of millions of dollars invested in the program.
Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just a whole different type of aspect. So, I mean, we catch a good number of billfish, sailfish, blue marlins, white marlins, and we'll semi-target them.
Okay.
But it's almost like a bycatch for us.
Gotcha.
People who charter me for catching meat and just for going out and having fun. That's like, I mean, I get calls for people wanting to charter me for tournaments.
Right.
We don't do it.
I gotcha.
Because most people, they'll say, well, how come we didn't win anything? Well, you know, they're that boat next to us that did win. They've been tournament fishing for the last 15 years and have invested over $15 million in the past 10 years, and they just won their first
right.
tournament. That's, you know,
yeah, that's right.
That type of fishing really does not have any place off of South Carolina for a charter boat.
Gotcha. Well, we got about a minute left. Dolphin are kind of a really neat fish, and we're not talking about flipper here. But take a little bit, just about a minute, and tell us about the dolphin. You know, they start down in Florida and go all the way up to off the Outer Banks and all through New England. Tell us about those fish, because they grow extraordinarily fast.
Yeah, the dolphin fish is the fastest growing fish that science is aware of. When they hatch to within a couple of months, they already are legal size for taking home, which is 20 inches.
Okay.
Right now we're catching what they call gaffers. Those okay. are the bigger 15, 20, 30, 40 pound fish that have already spawned. When their spawns down in the Gulf hatch, by the time they get to South Carolina, they're already going to be 2-3 pound fish.
Yeah.
By the following year, the ones that survive, those will be our gaffers. And by that point, they have made their migration all around the stream and back around.
Just an eating machine, but good to eat, too.
Oh, delicious. Yep, that's, there's nothing you can do to a dolphin to make it taste bad.
What's the website they can get you at, Gasper?
My website?
Yes, sir.
Yep, my website is www.wadmacaulick.com.
Hey, appreciate you being on. We'll do it again.
Absolutely. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yes, sir, Gasper. Thanks. And welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. It's hard to get everything you want to do in, but Gasper's a really nice, really considerate boat captain. The Wadmacaulick is a big boat, which means it's a comfortable boat. It's not set up like some of them where you got, creature comforts and all that, but it's air conditioned. It's set up to fish. I like the boat. In fact, when I was down there talking to Gasper this spring, he was having a door put in it. You know, the door between the back of the boat and the galley, if that thing slams shut and somebody's trying to catch it, you kind of really get mashed up in there. But he was having a hydraulic door put in there, so it caught itself. And we talked for a good bit. It's really good choice if you decide to go offshore fishing. It is an experience. There is another world of sea life out there. And I tell you, if you spend all day out there, I may be crazy, but it just seems to me like the ocean begins to slant after a while. It's really a bizarre feeling. But anyway, trying to get a hold of Brandon here. We'll see if he'll, if we can, I don't know where he is today. It's kind of a last minute, got a hold of him and he was in Texas with me. So we'll see. I guess a couple more things for the calendar. Let's see, bird walks at the Center for Birds of Prey down in Allendale, South Carolina. June the 4th and June the 11th, they're going to, you know, just painted bunnings, indigo bunnings, wood storks, rosette spoonbills. A lot of these things you can see back behind the Birds of Prey campus in Allendale. It's a 2-hour walk. Space is limited to 20 participants and advanced reservations are required. You can check them out at the Centers for Birds of Prey or call them at 843-971-7474. You know, we've had a couple of people on the show to talk about summer camps. I got an email from the National Wild Turkey Federation. They're having summer camps at the Outdoor Education Center in Edgefield, South Carolina. I'm assuming that's going to come out under PJ Perea, who's the director of education down there. You're going to have industry professionals, experts in the fields of hunting, fishing, camping, shooting, fish, and wildlife management, outdoor recreation. These are day camps. Session one, fishing camp, June the 6th through the 10th. Students will learn knots, casting, live bait fishing, lure fishing, fly fishing, and boating skills. Children need to be 8 to 15 years old and must be able to swim in order to do the boating classes. Session 2, Survival Outdoor Skills Camp. This is June 13th through the 17th. Students will learn first aid, fire building, signaling, navigation, shelter building, and water purification skills. Children need to be 8 to 15 years old and must be able to hike at least 3 miles. Session 3, Target Shooting Camp. Students will learn BB gun, archery, 22 rifle, shotgun, target shooting skills. 8 to 15, this is June the 20th through the 24th. Fish and Wildlife Camp, this is water quality analysis, animal and plant ID, conservation principles, wildlife management. Again, 8 to 15, that's June 27th to July the 1st. Looks like they're going to take a couple weeks off. Then you're going to have Hunting Camp. This is game calling, animal and plant ID, archery, rifle, and shotgun shooting. 8 to 15, must bring eye and ear protection for the shooting activities, July 18th through the 22nd. And then the last one is Advanced Outdoors. This is Advanced Fishing, Boating, Survival, Hunting, Shooting, Wildlife, and Forestry Management Skills, 8 to 15, and must bring ear and eye protection for the shooting activities. That's July 25th through the 29th. Camps 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., 30-minute drop-off on either side. Bring your lunch, water bottle, and wear camp T-shirt, closed-toed shoes. 30 kids per camp, so go to the National Wild Turkey Federation and find out more information on that. We got him. We caught us an FLW angler. Brandon, how are you?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm doing well, man. You recovered from Texas yet?
I have. I recovered, relaxed for a week, kind of got over it. It was a kind of tough tournament for me and a tough lake to fish. So it was, glad to get back home.
Man, you know, I guess flatland lakes, when you don't cut the trees down, this is what you get, right?
That's right. There's a lot of lakes. We're actually fortunate around here. Well, you could say we're fortunate, or maybe some people wish we had them, but the trees, our lakes around here, if it does have trees, it has good navigation trails and everything.
Right.
It's kind of a normal thing in Texas is just pretty much build a lake and leave everything. And
yeah.
It makes it a pain to get around, but that's also the reason Texas has some giant fish.
Yeah. Did you hit much during the week?
Did not hit much. On plane, running.
Okay.
Most of the trees were 1 to 2 foot under, 1.5 to 2 foot underwater. So once you actually got the boat up,
okay.
you were okay. I had plenty of idling, but once you got up, you were pretty safe.
Yeah, I was riding with my media boat driver, and you know, I don't like sitting there anyway. So I was up running the trolling motor. We came off plane one time, and I dropped that trolling motor and looked down. And I was like, oh my goodness, we're running across that stuff.
It is. It's definitely. You kind of had to pretend like it wasn't all there, because I think if the lake had been down another foot to 2 foot, it would have been a whole different story. There would have been a lot of lower units lost to trees.
Yeah, I mean we idled. I mean, it took me, I think when I left Anthony and went over to you, it took us like an hour to find you because we had to idle so much. I mean, it wasn't like we were running up a creek channel 70 miles an hour and saying, nope, not here, we'll go to the next one. You know, we finally had to contact tournament operations and say, where is Brandon Cobb?
That's right. They were calling me and looking for me, and I was trying to figure out why, because I wasn't catching too many fish.
Yeah, well.
it was definitely, that lake was like a jungle. Anybody around here that wanted to see somewhere that compared to is real similar to like the timber on Lake Russell, except for the entire lake.
Oh, yeah, the entire lake. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So what'd you, did you learn anything? Did you bring anything back with you you can use down the road?
Well, you learn little minor things just when I go to more lakes that look like that in the future, or just minor things about kind of what to look for. And that's actually one of the first times I've ever fished a lake. Out of everywhere I fished, I fished a lot of different types of lakes, but I haven't fished too many lakes that were high while we were fishing, kind of okay. high and flooded in the bushes.
Right.
And that one was really high and flooded. I fished some high flooded muddy lakes where they just recently came up.
Okay.
But that one was relatively stable. It was high and in the bushes. And I kind of, believe it or not, I don't think I fish shallow enough, to be honest with you. I fish extremely shallow about all the time. And I right. think I might have missed them a little. I was fishing that 2 to 2.5 foot range. I believe a lot of the fish were even shallower, like way in the willow bushes. It's hard places to get to.
Well, you know, they've had, what, 7, 8 years of drought. And during that drought time, a lot has grown the banks of those lakes. So, when Brandon's talking about willow bushes, yeah, we're talking those things are now back in the water and the bank's 40 feet behind them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's right. And it's not just willow bushes. That's kind of what makes it hard to find them on a lake like that, because you've got the old dead sticks and just grass out in that 7, 8 foot of water.
Right.
Then you got a line of bushes that start in about 5. Then you go behind those bushes and there's a different whole version of grass that's been in water a different amount of time in that 2 to 3. And then you get up to that 1 to 2.5, and it's a whole different kind of bush that just now got in the water. So
jeez Louise.
It's a lot of places to hide.
And people want to be professional bass fishermen.
It's fun most of the time.
Most of the time. Well, you're sitting pretty good right now for the cup. Kentucky Lakes coming up. What do you think about that one?
Yeah, Kentucky Lakes next. It's a lot different than the lakes around here, lakes I grew up fishing. It's a Tennessee River lake, so it's a great fishery. I mean, one of the best in the United States, and it's all, this time of year, it's pretty much ledge fishing out there. You fish drops in 12 to 25 foot of water, and there'll be massive schools of fish. And it's something I haven't had a lot of experience doing. I like doing it.
Okay.
I'm still kind of inexperienced at it, but it's something pretty much I'll go up there and I'll spend 3 days sitting behind the grass and idle. I may not pick up a rod for 3 days, 3 12-hour days of practice.
Wow. 3 days you're going to idle around just marking places you want to come back to.
Pretty much. And the problem is if you see something that you think, like, you see them on the graph, like, man, that's bass. I mean, when I see them on the graph, for the most part, I know it's bass, or I know it's not bass, or some people can tell the size of them by seeing them on the graph, and I haven't quite gotten to that level, but I can for sure tell if it's bass or if they're feeding, you know.
Okay.
And the problem is, you see them and say, I want to see how big they are. I'm going to stand up and make a few casts. Well, you stand up and make a few casts. Well, somebody, so-and-so rides down the lake and sees standing up fishing. They're like, oh, he saw something on the grass there. Well, I'll come back down later. I'm going to have to check out to see what that was. And it's just a normal thing. I mean, I've done it.
Everybody, right.
If you see somebody fishing, I mean, you're in the middle of the lake. It's not like you're hiding. You're obvious. So.
Yeah. Well, it was quite a, you know, sitting up in the club there at the fest and all, and you and Adrian and Vina sitting there, and we were talking, and you explained ledge fishing to me. Don't explain it to me again, because I got it the first time. Explain it to everybody else when you say ledge fishing. What are you talking about?
Okay, the difference between, like, really any Tennessee River lake, which is what you would classify as the ledge lake versus our lake, is the way our reservoirs are made, you've got a bunch of points and pockets and just basically the center of the lake is, for the most part, too deep to fish.
Okay.
Is what it would be a good way to put it around here. I mean, our lakes are 50 to 80 foot.
Right.
Well, and then you can make fish in some points and like some banks and drop offs and stuff. But out there, it's got a 50, 60, 70 foot deep river channel. And then once you come out of that river channel, majority of the lake is anywhere from 12 to 8 foot deep. So the fish will get on these big flats and the drops where it actually goes in the river channel, and they could be anywhere. I mean, on the bank, essentially on a drop that comes off the bank, or maybe 400 yards from the bank on a drop that goes from 6 foot to 12 foot.
Gotcha.
And there's always current flowing down these lakes, and the fish group up in big schools because of that. Our lakes around here don't have any noticeable current schedule.
Right.
You might kind of notice they're moving, but out there when they pull the current, the channel marker buoys they'll be bouncing, they'll be dancing, and you can tell that the current's pulling and the fish will be biting.
And now everybody knows what ledge fishing is. That's exactly right.
It's awesome when it's on. I mean, we don't have fishing like that around here. I mean, there'll be 10,000-20,000 fish in one school. I mean, it'll be a half mile long of fish.
Wow. And it's just finding the biggest ones that'll bite you, right?
That's right. And the less obvious ones is the problem, because pretty much anything on the main river ledge where it drops from
right.
the flat into the actual river channel, somebody's found it
okay.
almost every time.
I gotcha.
And it's normal out there. That's the thing I had to get used to. I mean, it's normal to fish with 15 or 20 people in one school of fish out there.
Well, you know, as long as you're courteous.
You are. And most people usually are, and you kind of get your little spot set in the middle of everybody, and you fish. And it's kind of a pain. It's something I'm not used to, but you can't really win like that. To do that, if you're doing that, you're kind of fishing for a check, because you're not going to win in the middle of 25 other boats in
general. I got you. Yeah, because you're all catching the same fish.
That's right. That's right. It could be, I mean, it's probably check class fish. But it's not, unless you go do that and then have some other schools to cull up, maybe catch some fives and sixes, then that's not the way to win.
Wow. Well, very good. Well, I enjoyed being down in Texas with you. Good luck going to Kentucky, and let me hear from you when you get back.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming and surprising me down there.
Yeah. That first picture I've got, the look on your face is priceless. It's like, what are you doing here?
Yeah, I had no clue. I think you were giving me a test phone call just to see, and then you showed up. You didn't say anything about it when I talked to you.
No, I didn't say anything about it. I was just wanting to get out there and just see if I could catch some Texas fish. You caught a few. At least I got to see you catch some fish.
Yeah, I think you got to see me catch almost everything I caught the second day.
On Saturday.
I didn't catch much, and you were on Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't catch much, and you were there for four of them, I think, or three of them.
Yeah, it was kind of fun. This is the tough part about coming and watching you guys is actually seeing you catch something. Because, you can just not be looking at you for a minute or so when you catch something, because you bring it on the other side of the boat, and boom, you know, it's all over with. But had a good time sitting around talking to you. Like I said, good luck, Kentucky, and let's hear from you when you get back.
All right, and I want to say hey to one of my buddies on the radio today.
Go ahead.
I want to tell Peyton Sara, good luck at his shooting competition, and we'll try to go catch some big fish tomorrow.
Good enough, man. Well, take care of yourself, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, I appreciate it.
Thanks, Brandon.
Talk to you later.
All right, bye. Bye. All right, hang on. We're going to come back. I'm going to tell you about the deer regulations, I'll never get through the rest of it. Just hang on. We'll finish up what we can. We'll get back. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. It is Memorial Day weekend. Be careful out there on the water if you're out there. I know there's a lot of people headed to the lakes. This would have been a good weekend to head to the mountains and not to the beach. If you're at the beach, be careful. If you're headed to the lakes, be courteous. And you're out there to have a good time. Everybody can do that as long as you look out for one another. If you're down at the coast, make a run. You can get them out actually right there in Charleston at Magwood Seafood. They're probably not going to be off fishing. Haven't been off fishing for a couple of days. But check with them, Carolina Seafood in McClellanville, Livingston Seafood in McClellanville. I went down Monday when I flew back into Charleston. I drove to McClellanville, picked up 50 pounds of South Carolina shrimp. They're 15-20s, headed them, and froze them. You can freeze a shrimp if you freeze it right. And I do mine in Tupperware containers, 18 to 20 of this size in each Tupperware container. You get some spring water. Do not use chlorinated tap water or ruin a shrimp in a heartbeat. In fact, don't even wash a shrimp in your sink. Just cook them with whatever juice they have on them. But you put that and you put them in and you squeeze the lid down. And when you get water running out, seal it up, freeze it. Rutledge Leland, owner of Carolina Seafood, will tell you a shrimp that's frozen like that will taste just as good coming out as it was before it went in. National Fishing and Boating Week is next starts next weekend, June the 3rd through the 5th. Walmarts across the state of South Carolina will have giveaways. We'll have pros in stores. You can go to the, well, I didn't go to the website. I went somewhere else because I got a press release on it. You can look for your local Walmart. They have giveaways, have pros there with, he'll answer questions about fishing. Just a good thing. And, you know, like I said, next weekend, take someone fishing. That's what you need to do. I'm going to try myself. Let's see. I got all that. Okay, got through all that stuff. The new deer regulations. Here you go. What started out is four doe tags, four buck tags. And DNR is in their part. And I talked to, Charles Ruth. They wanted a tagging system and a statewide limit on bucks. So we have that. We have a tagging system now. There's some questions about the enforcement part of it, but it's here. We have a limit on bucks. What we got was, though, a little bit different. If you're in the antlerless deer quota program, it's a whole nother set of things for you. That's mostly low country. And I'm going to deal with just the individual guy. When you buy your South Carolina hunting license, this will start in 2017. This will not be 2016. It'll start next year. When you buy your hunting license, you will get a set of antlerless deer tags. There's going to be eight of them. This is one of the politicians' remedies that got into this thing. There's going to be eight antlerless deer tags. Now they're going to be date specific. In other words, it might be October the 12th. If you don't go deer hunting on October the 12th, that antlerless deer tag is not good anymore. It's like it's expired. There will be two antler-restricted buck tags. Oh, hang on a second. I'm sorry. Three. Okay. So you got eight doe tags. You have three buck tags. These are unrestricted. In other words, there's no point restrictions or size restrictions at all. So that's what? Eight and three is 11. You can buy two additional buck tags, but they are for a minimum of 4 points on one antler or a 12-inch inside spread. The additional tags cost you $5 a piece. So in other words, you spend $10 to get two additional buck tags, which are restricted. In addition to that, you can get additional antlerless deer tags for $5 per tag. That is something that's set at the discretion of the department. Natural Resources will set that based on, I don't know what they'll base it on starting off, but that's the way they will manipulate the harvest a little bit. But it's not what we started out with. I know a lot of people are not happy with this. Like I said, DNR wanted a statewide buck limit, which is something the Lowcountry has never had. We've always had it here in the upstate. And a tagging system. Now, how this works enforcement-wise, I mean, you know, if you take it to a processor, well, the processor's not going to take it unless it's got a tag on it. If you self-process at home, I guess, you know, it's up to you when you pull the trigger as to whether you're going to obey the law or not. And I think that's pretty much what I'm going to end with. I've got a few minutes here. It is Memorial Day. This is when we celebrate, memorialize those who have died in defense of our country. You know, in everybody's life, there is someone in the political stage that just makes an impact. And for me, growing up in the 80s and all, it was Ronald Reagan. And he made a speech May 31st, 1982 at Arlington National Cemetery. I looked all over the place, could not find the audio because he says it much better than me. But here are just a couple of excerpts from his Memorial Day speech. 1863, when he dedicated a small cemetery in Pennsylvania marking a terrible collision between the armies of North and South, Abraham Lincoln noted the swift obscurity of such speeches. Well, we know now that Lincoln was wrong about that particular occasion. I have no illusions about what little I can add now to the silent testimony of those who gave their lives willingly for their country. Words are even more feeble on this Memorial Day, for the sight before us is that of a strong and good nation that stands in silence and remembers those who were loved and who in return love their countrymen enough to die for them. Our first obligation to them and ourselves is plain enough. The United States and the freedom for which it stands, the freedom for which they died, must endure and prosper. Their lives remind us that freedom is not bought cheaply. It has a cost. It imposes a burden. And just as they whom we commemorate were willing to sacrifice, so too must we, in a less final, less heroic way, be willing to give of ourselves. Then it goes on for a few more minutes, and another passage is, our goal is peace. We can gain that peace by strengthening our alliances, by speaking candidly of the dangers before us, by assuring political adversaries of our seriousness, by actively pursuing every chance of honest and fruitful negotiations. And he was just leaving for Europe after this. This is 1982. The willingness of some to give their lives so that others might live never fails to evoke in us a sense of wonder and mystery. One gets that feeling here on this hallowed ground, and I have known the same poignant feeling as I looked out across the rows of white crosses and stars of David in Europe, in the Philippines, and the military cemeteries here in our own land. Each one marks the resting place of an American hero in my lifetime, the heroes of World War I, the Doughboys, the GIs of World War II, or Korea or Vietnam. They span several generations of young Americans. All different and all yet all alike, like the markers above their resting places, all alike in a truly meaningful way. Winston Churchill said of those he knew in World War II, they seemed to be the only young men who could laugh and fight at the same time. A great general in that war called them our secret weapon, just the best darn kids in the world. Each died for a cause he considered much more important than his own life. Well, they didn't volunteer to die. They volunteered to defend values for which men have always been willing to die if need be. As we honor their memory today, let us pledge that their lives, their sacrifices, their valor shall be justified and remembered for as long as God gives life to this nation. And let us also pledge to do our utmost to carry out what must have been their wish, that no generation of young men will ever have to share their experience and repeat their sacrifice. Earlier today, with the music that we heard and that of our national anthem, I can't claim to know the words of all the national anthems in the world, but I don't know of any other that ends with a question and a challenge as ours does. Does that flag still wave over the land of the free and the home of the brave? That is what we all must ask. Thank you. Ronald Reagan, May 31st, 1982. Enjoy your Memorial Day weekend. Have fun. Cook out. We are. Be careful out on the water. And as always, take those back roads and don't ever, ever, ever forget that camera. I'll see you next Saturday here again on Woods and Water, South Carolina.